Nothing I can do. We failed. A sudden, sharp pain rips through me as my chest is pierced. No, not my chest. Caradox. He gapes down, the blade of a sword protruding from his ribcage. His fingers go slack, and his jaw drops. A scarlet drop of blood falls from his lips as he slides off me. I slam back into my own body, gasping for breath. Caradoc topples onto the floor, dead. Above me, Raphael stands, deathly white. Blood drips off his blade, and he kneels down.
Nia, are you all right?
Yeah. My voice cracks, and it hurts to talk.
We did it. Caradoc is dead.
Raphael slides his arm around my waist and helps me stand. No. I lean into him, touching my bruised throat. It doesn't matter. I saw Caradoc's mind. The Fey are launching an assault. They have an army of iron impervious Fey. He falls silent for a moment.
That's impossible.
I rest against his powerful chest, my head spinning. It's not. Fey herbalists learned from human medicine, like immunotherapy. They developed a way to do it by exposing their soldiers to microscopic amounts of iron, then slowly increasing it. Thousands of Fey died in the process. That doesn't matter to Oberon. He just wanted his army, and now he has it. I can hear Raphael's heart racing.
When are they attacking?
I try to think back to what I'd heard in Caradoc's mind, sifting through that wild flood of knowledge. I think in a week or two. We just killed Caradoc, which means the veil will drop in a few hours. Oberon won't hesitate. He'll launch the invasion as soon as the veil is down. All we did was make it happen sooner. We need to inform Sir Kay. We need to prepare all our forces. Raphael's fingers tighten on me.
MI-13's invasion force is waiting in southeast France for the veil to fall. They'll storm Fey France as soon as it happens.
That's not where they need to be. We need to get our forces where the Fey are actually planning to attack. I think back to the invasion plans, the maps. They plan to land near Dover.
Are you sure?
Raphael curses under his breath.
It's going to be hard to get them there in time. If what you say is true, the Fey army will already be on the northern coast of France. MI-13's force is at the southern border, nowhere near Dover.
We need to alert the British military right now. They have to be ready and inform Dover. They need to evacuate the city for the battle that's about to happen. Do you remember what happened in Brittany? Once the Fey arrived and the war started raging, they left nothing behind but ash. The streets were full of the dead. He scrubs a hand over his jaw.
We can send Ginevra with a message to MI-13's invasion force. Get them to change their course.
I nod. And we should ride as fast as we can back across the Vale. We need to get to a working phone. I stare intently as Raphael argues on the phone.
Because I'm telling you, he shouts. She saw into his mind. She's a telepath. No, she's not just a new recruit. She has Avalon Steel. Captain. Captain.
I hear the drone of a dial tone on the other side. They weren't listening to us. Both of us are grimy and exhausted. We rode all night. By the time we reached the Vale, it was long gone. Raphael's first phone call was to MI-13's command to inform them of what we'd found. But all of MI-13's agents were out in the field, some on the assassination task forces, the rest with Sir Kay's invasion force. His second phone call was to his contact in the British military.
He wouldn't listen,
he says, his expression grim.
Oberon's plan worked spectacularly. As soon as the veil dropped, Oberon launched a fake assault on southern France. French and British military responded in force. The majority of the British army and navy are there now.
But that's not where the iron impervious Fey are going to strike, I say, sickened.
MI-13 is sending everyone to Dover, but the majority are too far off,
Raphael says.
We're among the closest.
I swallow. We need to collect as many agents as we can and get to Dover as soon as possible. He nods.
Exactly what I was thinking.
My stomach drops. There are tens of thousands of people in Dover, and they have no idea what is about to hit them. Chapter 45. 2 days later. With my bow and quiver of arrows strapped over my back, I stare at the horizon, the salty wind whipping at my face, eyes squinting with effort. Morning is breaking over the Strait of Dover. In the dawn light, the famous white cliffs are a rosy gold streak across a periwinkle horizon.
Our little ship is racing toward England's shoreline. I keep searching for the smoke and debris that would signal death, or Fey ships clustered around the port of Dover. But there are no signs of battle yet, just the honeyed sunlight dancing over the sea. A calm, tranquil morning, which is ironic, considering what's about to happen. "How's your stomach?" Tana asks, joining me at the ship's rail. I grip the rail hard. "I've been worse. It's been a long 2 days. Before we got on the boat, we managed to gather a few other members of the task forces that had been sent to assassinate the Veil Magicians. Freya, Serana, Naveen, and Tana got on board with us. There aren't nearly enough of us, but it's better than nothing." The cold breeze whips at my hair, and dread settles in my stomach. "Can you see anything new?" I ask. "Any future glimpses into what's going to happen to Dover?" She shakes her head. "It's always hard to see through battle fog. The future is now as unknowable to me as it is to you." "Do you hate that?" "Not as much as you'd think." I take a long breath and try to calm my roiling stomach. "We're almost there," Tana says softly. I see houses in the distance, the breakwater jutting out into the sea. I squint, searching for smoke, for wreckage. "Are we too late?" "I don't think so," she whispers, handing me a pair of binoculars. "We might be just in time." I peer through the glass. Things look still, and the cranes aren't moving. No vessels coming or going, and I don't see any sign of Fey ships. British troops are deployed around the port, carrying rifles. Maybe MI-13 were able to get through to them, even if we weren't. I let out a long, slow breath. The sun is rising higher, bathing the coast in gold as we race to the port, a network of piers and docks that jut out into the sea, dwarfed by the towering, dawn-kissed cliffs. Seagulls swoop overhead, shrieking into the autumn wind. As the ship starts to slow, we maneuver into berth, the engine purring. An old stone castle looms over the cliffs, bathed in a golden hue. The Union Jack and the Port of Dover flags fly from its turrets, snapping in the wind. Nausea is making my stomach churn and my mouth water, and I'm desperate to get off the boat onto steady land. The moment it docks, I rush onto the pier and lean over, bracing my hands on my knees. Here I am, the great Avalon Steel agent, trying not to hurl on the pavement because I can't handle a few waves. When my nausea subsides, I straighten and see an army officer with a fully gray beard striding up to Raphael. The officer is flanked by four armed men. "Who the hell are you?" he barks. "The port is closed." "I'm Agent Lancelot, Secret Service," Raphael says, and flips an ID card at the man. "I need to talk to the person in charge."
"You can talk to me," the man answers impatiently. "I'm Captain Atkinson. I'm in charge here. Secret Service, you said? Which section?"
"Atkinson. The veil is down," Raphael says, ignoring his question. "And the Fey are about to invade England. We need to..."
"I've been told all this, but it's no longer a concern," the man snaps. "We've been getting ready for the past 2 days, but the threat is controlled now. Yesterday there was a battle between British forces and the Fey in the south of France. A platoon of tanks with iron ammunition wiped half of them out in an hour. They're not going to make it here."
My stomach drops. "No, that assault is a feint," I interrupt. "The real force is coming this way. They're going to land here soon." He raises an eyebrow at me.
"I've been told they will not make it out of France."
"Did you evacuate the city?" I ask.
"I'm not going to panic people for no reason. Like I said, they're not going to make it here. It's being handled in France."
"Then where is everyone?" Raphael asks.
"Safe. Perfectly safe. We had an alert of a dragon flying a few miles southeast, so we told everyone to get in the shelters just in case. And we have anti-dragon guns ready if the monster swoops near."
"Anti-dragon guns?" I ask. He rolls his eyes.
"Look, love, don't worry about it. The military has been preparing for this. These anti-dragon guns shoot a volley of iron-cased ammunition with deadly precision. We can handle a dragon, even two if they show up, which I don't think they will."
"These dragons are immune to iron," I grit my teeth. "And there'll be more than two. You need to evacuate the city."
"Absolutely not. That's what the shelters are for. An evacuation would be utter chaos. Utter chaos," he repeats for emphasis. "And for what reason? The threat is in France."
"Captain," one of his men calls. Atkinson's face has gone red.
"Look, I've dealt with some of you intelligence people before. And if you ask me, it's a misnomer. Intelligence for you lot."
He wags his finger at our small group. Always thinking you know best, don't you, Spooks? You hate that the army is in charge here, that we've got things under control. We're wiping the Fae clean off the map in southern France, and even if a few stragglers get here... Captain, we can handle them. This is Dover. We've been 30 miles from the border with Fae for the past 15 years. You think we've been sitting on our asses? We've been preparing for this. There's so much iron in this city. We can take down every Fae soldier on Earth, and there'll still be enough for... Captain!
Atkinson whirls around.
What? We just got word from command. There are dragons and ships incoming.
The captain's fingers curl into fists.
How many? They're not sure exactly, but it's a very large force.
I point to the horizon. Why don't you count them yourself, Captain? They appear in the distance amid the clouds, at least a dozen red, green, and black dots. Dragons. And below them, a glinting mass of clipper ships with billowing sails that are roseate in the morning light. Mist whispers along their keels, and dragons swoop above them washed in gold. My breath catches.
Fuck.
Atkinson stares at the enormous Fae force, then mutters,
Let the little fairy boys come. We'll blow them back to fairy hell.
Captain, listen to me, I say, feeling my patience coming to an end. This Fae army can't be stopped with iron. They outnumber you at least 10 to 1, and they'll be here in less than an hour. You have to evacuate Dover, or they will massacre everyone here. Remember what happened in Brittany?
Love, I don't think you know as much as I do about Fae and iron. Our castle is well stocked with cannons, and I'm not evacuating anything unless the Chief of the General Staff or the Prime Minister orders me to. Then get them on the phone,
Raphael snarls. Atkinson glares at Raphael. The men stare at each other for a few seconds, but then Atkinson looks away.
Get off the streets, agents, he says gruffly. It's going to get messy here, and you lot are not cut out for what's about to happen. I'm going to the castle, and you can fuck off.
He walks away, barking orders at his men.
What an arsehole, Serana says from behind me.
I turn around to face the others. We'll have to get as many people out as we can. A line forms between Raphael's brows.
Tonna, do you think you can figure out where the shelters are that he mentioned?
Definitely, she says.
He nods.
Good. Take Serana and find them. Naveen and Freya will need to figure out the fastest route to get all the civilians out. There will be chaos, and we've got to make sure that the way is clear and open.
On it, she says.
What about Nia? Serana asks. I clear my throat. Raphael and I will buy you time. I raise Tana's binoculars. Mind if I borrow these?
Take them, she says.
The dragons are looming closer, and I can make out the foremost ships and the glint of weapons on their decks. Immediately, my quiver of arrows feels wildly inadequate. I know we're spies and not soldiers, but this really would be a great time to have some gun training, I say.
Raphael slides me a worried look. Today, we are soldiers, it seems. We're heading to battle, whether we're prepared or not. I want you to stay close to me the whole time, do you understand? I can't have anything happen to you.
Fear flickers in his eyes, and I remember a time when I thought the man didn't feel emotions at all. Chapter 46. Raphael and I charge up the narrow stone stairs at Dover Castle behind a line of British troops. I've hardly slept in the past few days, and my breath is wheezing, but adrenaline is spurring me on. As I run, my steps echo to the beat of my pounding heart. At the top of the stairs, the door opens onto sun-washed battlements. The autumn breeze whips at my hair, and I stare out at the gold-dappled sea. The sight of the incoming fleet steals my breath. So many clipper ships, each with 3 masts and at least 20 sails. They're racing closer, a legion of them, each one packed with armored Fae soldiers. Dragons fill the skies, their scales gleaming with ruddy light. Their wingspan is the width of a house. Fear trembles along my ribs. Through the binoculars, I see one of the dragons unleash a gout of fire into the pearlescent sky, and the sight makes my stomach clench. 3 of these dragons could raise Dover in an hour. I count 15. Between the clipper ships, sea serpents undulate rhythmically, monsters from another world. Fae horns blare on the ships. Their war trumpets are 6 feet high, rising into the air above the soldiers' heads, with bells at the end shaped like wild beasts. Their haunting, sonorous call floats along the marine wind, and a chill seeps under my skin. We're not ready for them. England isn't ready for them. Atkinson is standing by one of the cannons, barking orders at his men.
Wait until they're close enough, he shouts. I want each of the ADGs aimed at a different one. Coordinate with the other towers. We have 6 guns. That should be enough to take those beasts out of the sky before they reach us.
ADGs? Anti-dragon guns? I remember Tana's words from months ago. Spy boys and their acronyms. That was the day I met the spies, and it feels like years ago. It's hard to even imagine myself as the person I was at the start of that day. A chick on vacation who just wanted birthday cake and a teensy bit of champagne on the beach. And now, I'm watching a fleet of Fey warships and a squadron of fire-breathing dragons race toward the cliffs of Dover, hell-bent on destruction. But there's no going back. I turn to Atkinson. Those dragon scales are thicker than tank armor. All you'll do is irritate them.
I swear I told you to fuck off, he spits at me. You need to listen to her.
Raphael's voice is pure steel.
She knows more about this invasion force than anyone else.
Both of you, get off the battlements! I consider arguing, but there's no time. The dragons are getting closer. I'm sorry, I say in a low voice. The captain's eyebrows rise.
For being a pain in my ass.
No, for this. I reach out and touch his cheek, already channeling my powers at him.
I see it all. A boy growing up on stories of heroics during the Fey invasion.
He joined the army for adventure, but by the time he was ready to fight, they'd already reached a ceasefire. And then, constant disappointment. His career stalled because he never knew the right guy, was never good enough. Finally, he ended up commanding the defense force in Dover, a force that never did anything. This was his big chance at last. The damn Fey don't know what they're in for. I've been waiting for the chance to become a hero my entire life. He's thrilled at the size of the fleet, by the soaring dragons. He'll be known as the commander who stopped the Fey, even when he was vastly outnumbered. I clench my jaw. One man's ego will lay waste to every civilian in the area. Not if I can help it. Pushing further into his mind, I force my will against his. Unlike Caradoc, he's easy to manipulate. Years in the army taught him that someone always outranks him. In this case, it's me. I lean forward, acting as if I'm talking softly to him for the sake of anyone watching, and then I give him one final mental push. He clears his throat, looking stunned, then says in a loud voice, "This woman's name is Nia Melisande. She's a Fey military expert from Secret Services. She will be taking command." The soldiers around us stare at me, uncertain. They've been training with Atkinson for more than a year. Nothing prepared them for a random woman taking control, which means I can't give them time to think it through. "You won't be able to harm the dragons," I tell them, my voice steady and authoritative. "Their scales are too thick, and they're immune to iron, so even if a missile gets through, it won't kill them."
"So what do we do?" a soldier asks.
I squint at the line of incoming dragons, reaching for Caradoc's memories. There, a possible weak point. "That dragon, the silver one with a red sheen," I point at the huge beast. "He's older, weaker, and his scales are thinner. He didn't get the full iron immunity treatment because it was making him too sick. If you concentrate your fire on him, you might be able to take him down."
"What about the rest?" another soldier asks.
"The Fey don't have many dragons, and they're planning for a long campaign. They don't want to lose any dragons in this attack. If we take one down, the rest might pull back to avoid further casualties and let the troops do the work." I have no idea if it will work, but I pray that it does.
"The dragons will be in range in 20 seconds, someone shouts.
"Coordinate with the rest of the ADG teams," I say urgently. "All cannons on that dragon. Do it, now."
"Wait," Atkinson mutters.
Damn it, he's recovered. I turn to him, opening my mouth, but Raphael is already by his side. His hand is on the man's neck, applying pressure, using the size of his big body to block the soldier's view. Atkinson's eyelids flutter and he collapses into Raphael's arms.
"He's sick," Raphael mutters. "I'll take care of him."
The soldiers aren't paying attention to Raphael at this point. All eyes are on the incoming dragons.
"Ready," a large sergeant booms.
Shouting orders into an old-fashioned radio, he instructs the artillery to aim for the silver-red dragon. The soldiers shift the cannons, heavy, primitive weapons that work with cranks and pulleys. None of the fancy targeting tech we had before the Fey invaded work anymore. I focus on that one sickly dragon flying behind the rest of the squadron.
"Fire!" the sergeant roars.
I cover my ears, but the blasts are still deafening. One shot goes wide. The second one, aimed much better, hits the dragon's body and ricochets off. I groan in despair. But now other guns across the castle battlements are firing, and more from the stone sentry points that line the cliffs. I lift the binoculars and see a spray of blood from the silver-red dragon. He rears his head back and shrieks, plummeting toward the sea. I watch through the glass, expecting the beast to crash into the water, but he starts beating his wings again and levels off. Not dead, but obviously badly hurt. The other dragons veer away and then circle back. Even from here, I can see the fury in their predatory eyes. For a few seconds, our lives hang in the balance. If they swoop down upon the city and unleash their wrath, we're doomed to burn. To my relief, they spread their wings and the squadron falls back. No need to risk dragon lives when the Fae troops are almost upon us, and they will do the job. Well done. Raphael touches my lower back. I've got something to show you. He leads me to the other side of the tower, where we can see the streets of Dover. People line the roads. The evacuation has started, but it's not fast enough. There are people milling together in long columns. Raising the binoculars, I see Serana leading one of the columns through the streets. I look at Raphael. We need to buy them time.
Excuse me, a male voice calls out. Commander Melisande.
Commander? I like the sound of my new title. Commander Melisande it is. I turn to the man. Yes?
What's that?
He points out to sea. I turn to look, and my heart sinks. Shimmering fog rolls ahead of the Fae battleships, a presence that buzzes loudly in my ears. The Veil. Why hadn't I thought of this possibility? The Veil isn't a wall anymore. It's a weapon. They don't need to risk their lives to conquer England, I mutter. They intend to kill everyone with the Veil.
Can you disable it?
Raphael asks, an edge to his voice. My legs feel weak and my thoughts are so panicked I can hardly think straight. For a few seconds, a minute maybe, but eventually I'll have to stop. All they have to do is blink at the city with it and wait. Raphael has gone completely still, the autumn breeze toying with his dark curls.
I thought killing Caradoc meant the Veil was disabled.
Just the border Veil, I say, which was hundreds of miles long. This thing is much smaller, but still large enough to roll through a city. All they need is one Veil magician to... I trail off, searching the approaching ships through the binoculars and listening to the sounds of the Veil, focusing on where the humming is strongest.
What is it?
Raphael asks. There. I point to a ship where a figure stands at the bow, draped in black. That's the Veil magician. Sergeant, do you have marksmen?
He frowns.
Yes, but didn't you say the Fae are impervious to iron now?
Some of them, but bullets will still stop them, even if the iron isn't poisonous. Shoot them enough times and they die just like a human. Can you take that Fae magician out? The sergeant barks his command into the radio and the rifles start firing. The air shimmers. More firing fills the air and clouds of gun smoke. The figure still stands and the sergeant curses. What's going on? I ask.
Some sort of magical shield, he says.
The Veil is almost upon the city now. Focusing, I summon my sentinel power, letting it bloom inside me. I can see the mist clearly as it moves forward and the magical energy woven around it. And beyond the Veil, a different barrier. Unfamiliar. That's the one I need to disable. I might be able to take it down for a few seconds, I say. Sergeant, fire on my mark.
Yes, Commander.
I clench my jaw and channel my powers at the barrier. It isn't like the Veil, a web I can untangle. It's more like a fixed wall of energy, and my powers just bounce off it.
Nia,
Raphael mutters. I grit my teeth. There's a point in the barrier where the magic seems thinner. I lash at it with all my strength. It shatters.
Now!
I shout. I hear the sound of guns firing. The freezing cold of exhaustion slides down to my bones, and I start shivering. Raphael wraps his arm around my waist, enveloping me with his warmth.
We need you to stay with us, Commander,
he whispers in my ear. I tremble and lean into him, staring out at the fleet, the ship's sails billowing in the wind. I let out a long, slow breath. The Veil has disappeared. The Veil magician lies slumped on the ship's bow. Dead, maybe. I pray that he was the only one. I don't have the strength to do that again. As I scan the horizon, I don't see another Veil rising from the sea. I pull away from Raphael and move to the other side of the battlements, looking out at the city. There are still far too many people clogging the Dover streets.
They'll take the city with their troops,
Raphael says grimly. Okay, I whisper. Then we have to slow them down. Give the rest of the civilians time to evacuate. Otherwise, Dover will become a bloodbath.
Let's get down to the docks. We'll need a barricade.
Chapter 47. I crouch behind a makeshift barricade formed of cars and military vehicles near the docks. A line of British soldiers waits alongside me, guns aimed forward. We're clearly no match for this army, but we can at least try to slow them. I peer over the hood of a car to see the clipper ships sailing for the shore. We managed to sink one of them with our cannons and damaged another severely, but the rest are still coming. Volleys of arrows fly overhead, darkening the sky for a few horrifying moments. We can't return fire. The Fae are mostly protected from our guns with their magical barriers. There's only one of me to disable them, and I'm at the brink of exhaustion. Cannons and guns thunder around us, and I survey the scene, arrows jutting from the dead on our side of the barricade, blood spilled over the streets. Acrid smoke floats through the air. I hunch lower behind the car. Arrows litter the pavement near me, and the sound of screaming punctuates the battle. Soon, the Fae will be charging through Dover, killing everyone in sight. From the docks, I hear the low rhythmic beating of a Fae war drum, the booms loud as the cannons. The Fae blow their Fae horns, a low and terrifying din that pierces my chest with primal fear. Another volley of arrows shadows the sky above us, and I press close against the car door. More arrows clatter to the ground inches from me. I peer over the hood and see the first three ships glide onto shore. My heart thunders as the Fae warriors jump onto the dock, their armor limned by the morning sun. Surrounded by their shimmering magical barrier, they charge, their ragged battle cries floating on the marine wind, a sound as horrifying as a banshee scream. The sergeant glances at me. "Not yet," I say.
"Steady,"
he shouts at the soldiers. More and more Fae storm ashore and swarm the cramped docks. The first Fae warriors are only 20 yards from us. I summon my powers, a bloom of scarlet in my mind, and smash through their magical barrier. Their shield shatters. The heat bleeds from my body, leaving me cold.
"Fire!"
Raphael yells, wrapping his arms around me. Dozens of semi-automatic guns fire around me, the sound deafening. Iron is not poisonous to this Fae army, and their bodies are stronger than the bodies of humans. But if you shoot them enough times, they will die. Shivering, I see many of the first attackers fall to the ground, dead or wounded. We may not have many soldiers, but the guns are effective. Raphael pulls me closer. He's trying to keep the chill away, but he also wants to protect me, wrap me up in cotton to keep me safe. But that's not why we're here, is it? The Fae keep coming, line after line of them, shrieking war cries against the hail of bullets. Even with our guns, the attackers are upon us. Chaos breaks loose as they scale the makeshift barricade and the soldiers fire their guns. Raphael bounds onto the hood of a car and unsheathes his sword. A Fae leaps after him, and Raphael cuts his throat, then immediately disarms another. He kicks a third attacker off the hood, then stabs him in the back. He is a whirlwind of violence, cutting down anything that comes close. But the barricades near us have already been breached, and Fae warriors storm into the streets of Dover. I unshoulder my bow and let an arrow loose, hitting a warrior's side as he's about to batter a human soldier to death. Another arrow flies over the mark. More guns fire, marksmen we deployed in surrounding buildings. Anarchy reigns around us, and the smell of blood mingles with gunpowder. At least the barrier protecting the Fae is gone now. And yet, some of them seem nearly impervious to bullets. A Fae warrior gets shot in the chest, but it barely slows him as he storms into a building with one of the snipers. A few seconds later, a dead human soldier crashes out of a window on the top floor. As I knock another arrow, a Fae leaps in front of me. He's 6 feet tall with silver hair, and his mouth is open in a feral roar. He swings his battle axe at me. I roll away, and he bounds after me. As he tries to strike again, he stumbles, a shocked look in his eyes. He falls to his knees, blood pouring from his chest. Raphael stands behind him, his blade dripping scarlet.
"Nia, we need to go."
I nod and get to my feet. "Sergeant, sound the retreat." Raphael wipes his sword clean.
"The sergeant is dead."
I follow his gaze and see the sergeant lying a few feet away from me in a puddle of blood. His eyes stare emptily at the sky.
"Retreat!" Raphael shouts at the soldiers. "Go, go!"
The soldiers obey, firing the occasional volley as they fall back. Atkinson has trained them well. The marksmen cover for each other, managing to get further away while slowing pursuit.
Raphael takes my hand and drags me out of the line of fire. I'm practically tripping over my own feet to keep up with him. We run toward the docks, the sound of guns and screams filling the air. I'm already running out of breath. We need to get up the cliffs and out of the city, I shout at Raphael.
We won't make it, he says. Too many Fae are already here.
Do you have a better plan?
Back to the boat.
He's right. Miraculously, the boat we arrived in is still intact and docked at the far end of the pier. Although the Fae came with an entire fleet, they've mostly landed on the other side of the port. What about the sea serpents?
They won't go after one small boat. They're here to protect the fleet from the British Navy, I hope.
You hope?
We don't have a ton of options.
We reach the long pier and start running down it, waves crashing to each side of us. The boat is just a couple of hundred yards away. In 5 minutes, we'll reach it and get out of... Oh, fuck. Some warriors are still debarking, and 5 of them are marching toward us on the dock, blocking our way to our boat. Raphael! I cry out. We skid to a halt. 2 of the Fae warriors at the rear of the group are among the most terrifying I've ever seen. A man and a woman, each nearly 7 feet tall, clad in black armor. Their matching red cloaks flutter behind them like battle standards. The woman holds 2 battle axes, 1 in each hand, and the man wields an enormous sword, the blade glinting in the sunlight. Compared to these 2, the Fae in front of them seem like toy soldiers.
The twins,
Raphael says grimly. Who?
Matissa and Vidal,
2 of the fiercest captains in Oberon's army. They must be in command of this force.
I swallow. Oh. I turn to retreat and find our way blocked by 3 more soldiers. They're advancing on us. We're trapped.
Nia, stay close to me,
Raphael says, raising his sword. I stand with my back to Raphael, facing the 3 Fae coming from the direction of the city. My mind screams as they rush at us. I loose my arrow and it pierces the throat of 1 of them, but the twins and their lackeys are bearing down on us from the other side. Raphael moves in a blur of speed, his blade whooshing through the air. He cuts down 1 Fae soldier, then kills the next with a sweep of his blade. He locks swords with the 3rd. 2 Fae soldiers charge at me, and I unsheathe my knife. I can hear Vivienne berating me in my mind. Who brings a knife to a sword fight? I duck as the 1st swings his sword, then pivot and touch his hand. Channeling my powers, I use the absolute terror I feel as fuel, pushing my fear into his mind. There is no time to process the strange thoughts that assail me. Instead, I crash against his senses, confusing him, making him mistake friend for foe. He turns and runs his blade through his Fae ally. I jerk my mind free as the Fae stares at the soldier he just killed.
Enyon,
he cries in anguish. His confusion gives me an opening, and I lunge at him, thrusting my knife into his throat. His mouth gapes in shock and pain, and then he topples off the pier and into the foamy sea, disappearing beneath the waves. Breathing hard, I turn around. 3 dead Fae lay at Raphael's feet. He's fighting with Vidal, their swords clanging loudly as they duel. The woman, Martisa, is gone, probably swallowed by the waves like the last Fae soldier I killed. I crouch in a battle stance, gauging the distance to Raphael and his opponent. The huge Fae is maybe 12 yards from me. As I prepare to attack, someone grips my hand and twists it. I yell in pain and drop my knife. A blade is pressed against my throat, and I reach for the knife hidden in my boot.
I wouldn't,
Martisa whispers in my ear, pain flaring in my neck as she digs the blade deeper into my skin. On the dock in front of me, I watch as Raphael parries a powerful stroke by Vidal, then twists his sword, sending his opponent's blade spinning into the sea. Vidal grapples for Raphael's sword, but Raphael smashes the pummel into the man's face. Vidal falls to his knees, and Raphael raises his blade to finish him off.
Raphael Lancelot!
Martisa shouts, her blade tightening against my skin.
Your reputation precedes you!
Raphael glances back. Seeing my predicament, he grabs her brother and places his bloody sword against Vidal's neck.
Harm her, and you will be a single twin,
he says coldly. We stand frozen on the dock, the sea wind shrieking around us. Blood drips down my neck and into my collar. I dare not even swallow.
Well, this is interesting,
Martisa says, almost as if she's enjoying herself.
Finish her, Martisa,
Vidal snarls. Raphael presses the sword closer to the other man's neck.
Quiet, he says, or you lose an ear.
Neither none of that, Martisa says silkily. We're not human barbarians, after all. Let's talk.
We have nothing to talk about,
Raphael says. You let go of the woman, and we go to my boat. When we reach the boat, I will release your brother, and we will leave.
I don't think so,
Martisa laughs coldly. Release my brother first, and then I'll let my new friend go. Not happening.
Then we stand here until my soldiers arrive to see what's keeping their captains,
Martisa says. If they even come close, Raphael snarls, I'll kill your brother.
Ach, what's with all the killing, Lancelot? Martisa sighs. I've heard tales, but I had no idea you were so bloodthirsty.
Fine.
I'll tell you what. We go to the boat together. Once there, we release our hostages at the same time and call it a draw.
Raphael considers this. Okay. I channel my telepathic powers through the fingers tightened around my arm. Almost instantly, I'm in Martisa's mind. It's like reading the mind of an ancient, cunning spider. Her past is littered with dead fae who've crossed her path, and she's planning to do the same to us. Raphael, it's a trap, I blurt. As soon as we sail away, she'll send a sea serpent after us. They obey her commands.
Well, Martisa laughs amused. She's a telepath. That's so much fun. I have to admit she's right. But who knows? You might manage to outrun a sea serpent in that boat.
I've had enough. I tug at both my powers and pour myself into her mind. I will make her drop her knife and...
None of that now,
she thinks, and slaps my mind away. I gasp, the connection broken.
You will not fish inside my mind again,
Martisa says aloud. Try that one more time, and you'll be the one to lose an ear.
Don't touch her,
Raphael says, clenching his jaw.
I'm growing bored, Martisa snaps. If we wait here long enough, you two will die, but so will my brother. He's an oaf, but I like him, so that's not going to happen. I'm also obviously not going to let you both go. That would be ridiculous. Oberon would flay us alive, but I actually have a reasonable offer. Let us take you alive.
That's not going to happen,
Raphael growls.
You misunderstand. I'm not talking about both of you. Just you, Lancelot. I'll let the girl go.
Don't, Vidal shouts. You can take them both.
Raphael squeezes the man's neck and Vidal sags unconscious.
Now, he says, his voice steely. You were saying...
Martisa seems unperturbed by her brother's treatment.
I was saying all I want is you. I'm willing to let the girls sail away.
Raphael snorts.
You'll send a sea serpent after her as soon as you have your brother back.
I won't. You can keep that sword to my brother's thick neck until this young telepath is well on her way.
No, you can't, I cry. She's lying. She just wants you alive. She wants to torture you and get all you know from you. We can't be taken alive.
Raphael clenches his jaw.
Why do you even want me?
He asks. Martisa shrugs.
I could not care less about you, but Oberon's psychics have been shrieking about the one person who might be able to stop him, the guardian of the lake.
They say that's you. And Oberon wants a chat to figure out how one man could thwart all his plans. I gasp. The Lady of the Lake? That's not Raphael, that's me. Oberon's psychics must have homed in on the general vicinity, but they got the wrong person.
It's me Oberon wants, I blurt. Tana told me I'm the Lady of the Lake, the Guardian of the Lake. She's been telling me this for months. You can't let them take you.
Listen, take Vidal on board the boat. Martisa won't send a sea serpent after you if you take her brother hostage. You can get away.
Raphael holds up one finger.
How do I know you're not lying?
He asks Martisa. She sighs. Ask your telepathic friend. I'll allow her a peek. She'll tell you that I speak the truth. Raphael looks at me.
Do it.
I nod, but not because I intend to play her little game. Once I'm in her mind again, I'll make her let me go. I connect with her again using my power and instantly see that she's being honest. She will let me go and allow Raphael to hold her brother hostage until I sail away. It's a risk. She knows it's a risk. But she suspects Raphael wouldn't kill her brother until I'm out of the sea serpent's range. And by then, she reasons, there'll be so many soldiers on the pier that she could disarm Raphael, even if he decides to cut her brother's throat. I won't give her that chance. I go for her mind, channeling all my powers into her head, feeding it with the flaming roar of the fierce protectiveness I feel for Raphael. I will take control and make her drop the knife. This time... She pushes me out even more violently. My patience is wearing thin, telepath, Martisa says. I told you not to do that.
Now, tell your commanding knight the truth of my thoughts, that I will let you go, and you can sail away as far as your heart desires.
I look at Raphael pleadingly.
Is she telling the truth?
He asks. The wind rises and the waves get higher and higher. I have to convince him to leave. She... I blink, my thoughts whirling. No, no, she's lying. She doesn't care about her brother. She just wants you alive. She'll kill me anyway, but she won't kill you because you have her brother, and because Oberon wants you alive. You can get on that boat if you leave me behind. Raphael's eyes soften.
Honia, for someone who spent so much time telling people what you thought they needed to hear, you're still not convincing. I thought I trained you better than this. What sort of spy lies so badly?
Tears sting my eyes. I can lie just fine, I say in a broken voice. Just not to the people I care about. But you can't let her take you alive. You can't.
Well, this is touching, Martisa says. I have to say, I just got all teary. Now, let's get this show on the road. To my shock, she lets me go and steps back. Go on, telepath, before I change my mind and decide that I might actually like being a single child.
I hurry to Raphael. Please don't, I plead desperately. Let's go together. Take her brother with us. She won't hurt us if we have him hostage.
She will,
Raphael says.
It's true what she said. Oberon will flay her alive if he finds out she had an agent of Camelot in her grasp and let him go. Especially the so-called guardian of the lake.
No, no, listen. I lean closer to his ear, whispering, they don't know it, but they want me, not you. I'm the lady of the lake. I'll give myself up and you can get out alive. He shakes his head.
Don't be ridiculous.
Raphael, I swear it's me they want.
I know that.
I stare at him, stunned.
Of course I know that. A single person who can stop Oberon, of course it's you. My lady of the lake.
You know? I whisper in disbelief.
I do, but they don't. So get in the boat. Stay alive. Stop Oberon, please. For me. End the House of Morgan and keep the tower safe. Do this. For me.
I can see that his mind is made up. He won't get off this pier. I try to find a way for this to be different. But no matter what I think of, it ends with Raphael dead or being captured. I think of taking control of Raphael's mind, of making him leave me here and take Martisa's brother as a hostage. But I don't. I can't do that to him. I turn away from him. Throat thick with tears, I get in the boat and switch on the motor. I've never sailed a boat myself before. I can hardly stomach being on one. But this boat has simple controls, and I drive away from the pier. When I look back, Raphael is watching me, his blade still on Vidal's throat. Martisa waits patiently a few steps away, her red cloak fluttering in the wind. My vision swims and the figures on the pier become blurry as my eyes fill with tears.
Chapter 48. I flee in the little boat along the shoreline until I meet with British Navy ships.
I'm picked up, and once I'm verified, supplied with transport to rendezvous with the MI-13 agents who had evacuated Dover. There's a war raging in the southeast of England now, and we're heading back to Camelot to see how we can help them fight the Fae. We've already slowed Oberon's invasion and saved tens of thousands of civilian lives. But I can't get my mind off Raphael and what he's going through right now. Sunset spreads a rusty mantle across the sky as the sun dips lower over the ocean. We're at the mouth of the river to Camelot. The river gleams in the coppery light, and the old gibbet sways in the sea wind. We glide up the river, fog coiling around us, and Camelot comes into view. Raphael should be here with us to see the oaks brushed with fiery shades of autumn, to feel the lure of home calling to us. And that's what Camelot is now, isn't it? Home? When I first arrived, everything looked strange and foreign to me, like something out of a dream. No, not a dream, a fairy tale that hardly seemed real. A world I was unprepared for. Now, the old Tudor-styled houses and the soaring stone of Avalon Tower, bathed in the ever-present mist, are familiar and comforting. Except that now my home is missing someone very important. Jagged pain pierces me. I have to get him back. No matter what happens, I will get Raphael back. I cling to the railing, trying not to throw up as we sail closer to the tower. Maybe the only thing that hasn't changed about me in the past 6 months is that I still need to puke every time I sail. And every time I think of Raphael, I feel more nauseated. I lean over the railing, my stomach roiling. Avalon Tower looms in the distance, the spires rising from the fog. In my mind, Raphael is there,
waiting for us on the dock.
But that is a fantasy.
I remember when you first came here with me.
Tana sidles up and hands me a cup of tea.
You looked so lost.
I take it from her gratefully. As I sip it, I start to feel a little better. I was just thinking the same thing.
Cheer up, Our Lady of the Lake.
Tana lays her hand on my shoulder.
It was, all considered, a good day.
My jaw drops open. A good day? People died. Raphael has been taken.
But we've slowed the darkness's progress, and we still have hope.
Raphael doesn't.
Doesn't he?
She asks.
Something in her tone eases the heavy weight in my chest. There's a playful smile at the corner of her mouth.
What do you mean? I ask. Did you see something? Can you just tell me, for fuck's sake?
Calm down.
She hands me her deck of cards. Shuffle them. I do as she says, shuffling them with trembling hands.
Now pick a card, just one.
This feels more like a magic trick than a reading.
It's a reading.
I take one card out and flip it. The star.
I've checked, over and over, Tana says. Always the star, past and future. And that, I'm certain, is Raphael. The card represents healing and the connection to the universe. Someone in tune with the creative force. If he were truly doomed, that's not what we'd see. His light would be dimmed. Raphael has been taken, that's true. But you can save him. You can get him back. And his light will return to us.
Against my better judgment, I feel hope rekindling in my heart.
Are you sure?
My throat is tight. She touches my cheek.
You are the Lady of the Lake.
I bite my lip. That sounds so formal.
How about Aquabitch?
Serana grins, joining us.
That's better, right?
Aquabitch?
Tana asks, scandalized.
What nicknames do you have for me behind my back?
Oh, you're the life of the party, Tana, for sure.
She blinks.
I am?
No, pet, that was sarcasm. We could be in the middle of the wildest piss-up in the world, draped with gorgeous men and drinking and dancing, and your eyes would go glassy, and you'd tell us some poor sod was murdered on the very spot we're standing a century back.
Oh, and also that we're all going to die in a week.
Tana arches an eyebrow.
Would you rather that I kept it secret?
I smile. Shockingly, Tana had good news for once. Apparently I'm going to rescue Raphael. Serana nods.
Of course you are. No one is stopping my Aquabitch.
By the time we reach the dock, there's a crowd waiting for us. I recognize Amon first by his long beard. Then other familiar faces come into focus. Agents who used to be cadets with me. And a few knights I've come to know. Darius is grinning and waving at us wildly. The Pendragons are noticeably absent. As soon as we dock, I get off the boat, thankful to be back on solid ground. My stomach is still queasy as Amon walks up to me.
Is there any news about the war? I ask.
He nods gravely.
Plenty. And it will be discussed later. But before we do that, there's one thing I wish to do.
He's holding a small case and he opens it. Inside is a torque, silver with a rosy sheen.
I swallow. Near Melisande,
he says.
I want to welcome you again to the Agents of Camelot. You are an Avalon Steel Knight.
He takes the torque from the case and slides it around my neck. All around me, people cheer, a sea of smiling faces, of friends, of comrades in arms. I wish Raphael were here to see this too. But Tana says I will get him back, and I know better than to doubt her. A chilly autumn breeze breathes down my neck. I pull up the hood of my wool cloak and walk along the shore of the lake. I should be asleep at this time of night. Everyone else is. But Raphael isn't here, and that means I can't sleep at all. When was the last time I slept properly? Days ago, I suppose. Before Oberon captured Raphael. The rain was hammering on my window as I was trying to fall asleep. And now that always reminds me of Raphael. Being wrapped up in his bed, in his tower room. Or kissing his rain-soaked skin in Fey France. It's drizzling now, and the earthy scent of petrichor fills the night. I don't know exactly why I'm heading to the bridge by Nimue's tower, but something is pulling me there. Maybe because it's where Raphael and I kissed that sultry summer night. Or maybe I've lost my mind from chronic insomnia. Fog drifts along the glassy surface of the lake, along with a few orange oak leaves, bright against the dark water.
I reach the bridge at last and climb the old stone stairs. They're slick from the rain, and I hold on to the rail. The tower looms over the lake, wrapped in mist. I pass the place where Raphael and I jumped in and feel my heart cracking at the memory. Gods, I wish I could go back in time. Some of the ancient carvings on Nimue's tower are glowing faintly, the triple spiral symbols. I walk through the arched doorway and feel the magic hum against my skin. On one side of the landing, a stairwell winds down to the lake. On the other side is a round room that looks like a temple. Peaked windows let in silvery moonlight. There's no glass in them anymore, if there ever was, and a cool breeze blows through the openings. In the center of the room is a circular altar covered in a layer of dust. Carved in the top of the stone are images of three women with long hair holding urns. I run my fingers over the carving for a moment before pulling away again. This is too old for me to be touching. Goosebumps rise on my skin. What did they use this for in the old days? Going to a window, I peer out at the lake. Excitement flutters through me. A boat is waiting at the base of the tower. I've been out here a few times before, and there's never been a boat. The small vessel glows in the moonlight, and I lean out the window for a closer look. It resembles a wooden canoe with a curled bow and stern, carved with intricate knotted designs. Two oars rest across it. My heart thrums. Some people say that the Lady of the Lake is a protector of Camelot. But that's not what Nimue was doing. That's not why she trapped Merlin in the oak. She was a bridge between worlds and a guardian of both. And when the humans started taking too much control, she tried to restore the balance. If I'm the new Lady of the Lake, what does it mean? In the center of my chest, I feel a tug, as if an invisible string connects me to the boat. I hurry from the chamber and bound down the stairs. The stairwell ends with an arched open door and a stone path that leads to the boat. I climb in and grab the oars, damp from the rain. Ignoring the persistent drizzle, I begin to row, my breath clouding the night air. I row faster. Surely this boat came to me for a reason. Desperately, I wonder if the reason is linked to Raphael. Tana said I would rescue him, and in the past 2 days, it became clear that none of the knights of the Round Table had any idea how to get him out of Oberon's grasp. The cool air bites at my skin as I work the oars. Nimue sacrificed her lover for her cause. But Raphael? He did the exact opposite. He put Camelot at risk to save me. I feel my chest cracking. The sooner I can get him out, the less likely it is they'll break him. And then I hear it. The hum of a veil. It's so foggy out here it's hard to see, but it's there. The opalescent sheen. It's a veil, but this one feels different. It emits a low, resonant hum that's almost musical. It's a different sort of magic. Beautiful and ancient. Primal magic, perhaps. Is this where Avalon has been all this time? My breath quickens, and I summon the red bloom of my sentinel magic. The moment the hum goes quiet, I start to row again, faster now, moving through the veil. What if this is where they're keeping Raphael? On Avalon itself? My oars carve into the water, and the mist thins. I keep going. I look over my shoulder at what I'm approaching and feel the world tilt on its axis. It's there. A rocky, moss-covered island. Avalon. A vast, rambling castle of stone perches on a craggy hilltop. Pale stone towers jut into the night sky, almost glowing. At lake level, apple trees and oak trees spread out over the island. I can hardly breathe. The boat touches the shoreline, and I leap onto the leafy shore, taking a moment to catch my breath. An old stone path winds up the hill toward the castle, and I charge up it, wheezing as I race up the uneven stairs. The moon hangs in the sky like a jewel, washing me in silver. The air is heavy with the scent of apples, and red and orange leaves carpet the stone stairs. But disappointment carves through me as I near the castle at the top. The place looks abandoned, not a single light or torch in view. The towers are crumbling, the gardens wildly overgrown. Bridges that go nowhere sprout from mossy walls. Of course, they're not keeping Raphael here. Upon closer examination, I notice the gorgeous craftsmanship of the stone. The carvings of triple spiral shapes, the phases of the moon, and faces made from the shapes of leaves.
Nia Melisande.
A deep voice stops me in my tracks.
A figure steps from the shadows of a ruined arch, wearing a black cape and a pale, spiked crown. A tendril of fear coils through me. I know that crown and those dark curls, the sharp cheekbones. That crown is in paintings all over Avalon Tower. No one wanted us to forget him. The House of Morgan. Mordred. My voice shakes. You're alive.
I am.
Did you send that boat for me? He takes a step closer.
I wasn't interested in you at first, but now that I've heard about the trouble you've caused for Oberon, my curiosity is piqued.
He's going to kill me. That's why he sent for me. He wants to protect his son. Rings gleam on his fingers. He has no sword, but he doesn't need one. Mordred Kingslayer killed Arthur, the great knight and king. He can crush me with his bare hands. I take a step back. I thought you died. Raphael plans to kill everyone from Mordred's bloodline. He has no idea that includes Mordred himself. His eyes are the palest blue. He shrugs.
I have been here all along. Once every 100 years I can break free, but only for a short time. And then I find myself back in my mother's castle. This is my curse.
I swallow hard. Your son can't free you?
I have no son.
My blood pounds hot and I can't feel the cold anymore. Oberon, King Oberon. His smile twists.
Is that what people think? They think that bastard is my son. No. Oberon belonged to Nimue and Merlin. Merlin. That duplicitous, traitorous fuck was the one who cursed me.
I clear my throat. You murdered King Arthur and all those people in Avalon.
Look at what they had planned.
He roars, gesturing at the castle.
The Fae Kingdom's in ruins. It was always going to be that way. Arthur and his bitch wife were always our enemies. Any idiot could see that. Anyone except Merlin. They say we enchanted the humans, but in Merlin's case, it was the other way around.
My voice sounds distant as I say, the House of Morgan is fated to destroy Camelot. Mordred flashes me a dark smile.
Oh, I know. And you are going to help me do it, Nia.
Mordred stares at the sky, looking lost in thought.
I see things in dreams, and sometimes I dream of you. There's a silver-eyed man you want to rescue from Oberon.
His sharp gaze lands on me.
And I'm the only one who can help you. My daughter.
You've been listening to Avalon Tower, part of the Fae Spy Academy series, written by Cian Crawford and Alex Rivers. Narrated by Amanda Lee Cobb, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Copyright 2024 by Corey Press. Production copyright 2024 by Corey Press.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.